On episode 639 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Risa Gru and discuss her book, Food Frame. Diet is a four-letter word. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/639. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness, the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. Each week, we dive deep into health and fitness topics that affect those of us over 40. I'm Coach Allen. I'm an NASM certified personal trainer with specializations in corrective exercise, behavior change, performance enhancement, and fitness nutrition. A precision nutrition level 1 coach, a FAI certified functional aging specialist, and an OTA level 2 online trainer. Each week, I'm joined by our co-host, Coach Rachel. She is an NASM certified personal trainer and a RRCA level 1 run coach. Let us be your coaches as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. Hey, Raz, how are you?
Good, Alan. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. I'm sitting in a hotel in Costa Rica, ready to get on a bus tomorrow at 5 a.m. to take me back to Bocas del Toro.
Oh, that's an early morning.
It is an early morning. It is an early, but it's a 10-hour ride. So, you know, they want to get us there. I think there's a lunch. I don't know. At any rate, it's just retracing the steps that I took to get up to Mexico for that that summit. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, retreat, whatever. We did a lot of hiking. It's funny, our the founder of the company says, we're going to go for a hike. It's a little over an hour. It took us three.
Is that right?
Well,
I hope you all were prepared.
It was like herding cats. You know, the someone would fall a little bit behind, and then, you know, we'd turn off and we'd stop and wait. And so, you know, at one turn, we didn't just wait at the turn. We were going towards the beach, which is what he had said we were going to do. So we turned towards the beach. We go to the beach, come up to a rock cropping. He goes over and jumps off the rock. And I'm like, not doing that.
Oh.
So I walked around the rock.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, everybody jumped off the rock. I walked around. I'm like, nope, I'll get my feet wet before I break a leg or worse. Anyway, I respect your age. Anyway, we ended up on a beach kind of away because the rock outcropping was somewhat blocking us, but they never even made that turn. They just kept going. So they walked through the jungle route, which was faster. So they actually got ahead of us. We were looking for them behind us and they were ahead of us. And so finally they stopped walking and we caught up with them, but for about an hour, well, 45 minutes, people were running around everywhere trying to find them, and nobody's none of them had phones that worked. You know, they were all sitting for Wi-Fi, so it wasn't like you could message them and ask where they were. But we did find them. Everybody got there, and it was cool. We had a couple good dinners, nice dinners together, and hung out a good bit. I think I did like 32,000 steps that day when we did the hike.
Nice, that's huge.
Yeah.
Wow.
So how are things up there?
Good, good. You know, I've mentioned I'm still recovering from my eye surgery and I've been pretty sedentary. I'm able to walk now. I actually just had my post-op and she has lifted all the restrictions I've had. So I did a tiny jog on the trail this morning, very, very tiny. And I can tell that I'm not ready for anything more than that. So I'll just increase my walking for a little while and enjoy the spring. So, but I'm feeling better.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad you're healing well. Just, you know, give it time. It'll get there.
It does take time.
All right. We'll make sure you're taking care of that.
Sure. Thank you.
When today's guest was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease that caused chronic inflammation and a host of other health issues, she became determined to find the root cause so she could reverse it without medications. With the proper testing and subsequent dietary and supplement treatments, she successfully and naturally reversed her symptoms. This inspired her to obtain her certification as an autoimmune specialist In addition to her clinical nutrition certification, this enabled her to better help her clients focus on the root causes of their health concerns and treat them naturally through diet and supplementation. With no further ado, here's Risa Grew. Risa, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Oh, thank you so much, Alan. It's great to be here.
Now, the name of your book is called Food Frame. Diet is a four-letter word, and I kind of get a chuckle out of that because it's true. And because I don't think any of us really like diets.
Yeah. They're old-fashioned, right? And what they do is they symbolize scarcity and deprivation and starvation. I think if you put some electrons in our brain, we'd probably, if we mentioned the word diet, it would all light up as starvation and scarcity. So I don't like that word. It's really a real word for how our eating lifestyle is, but it's been used so much for that deprivation and starvation and methods of weight loss goal that it's really kind of ruined the definition of the word. So I usually say eating lifestyles now, that really replaces the word diet. But yeah, I don't believe in diets. And I really struggled with that that subtitle because my agent was like, no, you cannot say that. You have to describe. And I'm like, you know what? It really kind of does describe what the book is, because it's not about a diet. It's not about, we all know our neighbor who went on some diet and read some book and they lost 40 pounds. But when you did it, you tried it, it didn't work for you, right? Because everybody shouldn't be eating the exact same way. So that's why I wrote the book.
I think the other thing is that diet kind of implies it's this short thing, like I'm going to do this till I hit something. And then once I get there, then I can go back to eating normal. When normal is what got us where we were,
and
will get us right back where we were, probably faster than we got there the first time.
Right. And I always say weight loss is a side effect of wellness, and I focus on wellness. So it's an eating lifestyle. That's all.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, you use another term in here that I really like, because, I've talked to a lot of functional medical practitioners, and it's more holistic, and I think people are starting to come around to the fact that, the medical system is somewhat flawed and broken. And so we need these other individuals that are stepping up to help us manage our health rather than manage our illness. But you use the term functional nutrition. Can you go a little bit into what that means?
So it basically means that I've been trained in functional medicine. And so I use the same four pillars in functional medicine as in my functional nutrition practice. They're based on four things, right? So one is prevention. We're always trying to look for prevention to prevent disease, right? In our allopathic conventional medicine community, we don't treat you until you're already in disease state, unfortunately. The second thing is we're always looking at root causes, right? And root causes, it's not that you have this pill for an ill paradigm that we have, right? You don't have headaches because you were born with a deficiency in medication. We don't have high cholesterol or anxiety because we were born with a deficiency in a medication. That's just not how it goes. So we are looking for the root cause. Why is it that I'm having anxiety or headaches or whatever it is that you're having? There is a root cause to that. So I'm always looking for that root cause. The third pillar is we look at the body as one whole interconnected unit. So everything has to do with each other. Our systems are connected. So we are looking for which system is not working and how it's all connected. And the fourth pillar that we're based on that I work with in my office is data. I don't know about you, but I'm not really good at playing darts with the lights off when I cannot see the target. So I need all the data I can get. I order a comprehensive blood panel, which shows me inflammation, all nine markers of your thyroid, all four markers of blood sugar, on and on and on and on. And then I order a very comprehensive stool test for everybody I work with. So you can see what is actually, those are the root causes. What's happening? What are the mechanisms that are happening that are causing health issues or prevention to causing health issues?
Now, you did mention thyroid. So I want to dive into that because This is the power source. And for a lot of us, we get into our 40s and 50s and we're told, okay, here your thyroid's not functioning well. Here's a medication that's going to help you. And I think you even asked the question, how long? It's like, well, for the rest of your life. And that's what my doctor told me. My doctor told me, it's like, you know, here's this thyroid medication and you're going to be on this for the rest of your life. And I was like, I don't understand. You know, I can't heal. I can't get better. This is always going to be this way. And at least for me, losing 66 pounds seemed to do the trick. you know, I started eating more of a paleo style, and that helped me heal. And so a lot of the things that I was told I would always be taking, I wasn't. And it was, you know, the doctor didn't want to take me off of it because he had been trained. Well, once you put them on this, they're always on this. And so I basically told him, I said, I don't think I really need this anymore. And I stopped taking it despite him telling me I should keep taking it. It was filled, but I didn't take it. And I went in, I kept getting my tests because I was at that point, I was getting tests every quarter. And he's like, right, everything's good. Everything's good. And I said, well, doc, I said, for 6 months, I've not been taking the thyroid medication. He's like, oh, well, maybe you don't need it. Because you're, you know, but unfortunately, that's kind of where we are. And I think another thing that's come up, usually when you go in to get your thyroid tested, you're only really getting one or two, maybe three numbers. But you said there were nine tests.
At best.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. What should we be doing if we, you know, and what are some of the symptoms if our thyroid's not functioning well? And when the doctor tells us, well, your THS or your T4, your T3 is out, or maybe it's perfectly fine, but you just know something's not fine. How do we manage that?
Yeah. So as you pointed out, it's extraordinarily complex. So what I liken it to is when you go to that science museum and you start on the third floor and you drop the ball down that track, and it goes in the tunnel and then it rings the bell and then it goes to the domino set and it goes through all these things until it finally 3 minutes later lands into the cup. That's pretty much the same complexity as the thyroid function. All those things have to happen in order for that ball to get into the cup. And we are born with this alarm system, right? It's our TSH, our thyroid stimulating hormone, is supposed to go up when balls are not getting into the cup. But it doesn't always work that way. I look at labs all day and I can tell you it does not work that way all the time. Sometimes it does, but many times it doesn't. So it is extraordinarily important to look at every function to see if you're able to get that ball in that cup. So conventional medicine usually just tests for TSH, that's thyroid stimulating hormone. Occasionally we'll see a free or total T4. And if I'm, you know, we're really lucky, we'll see a T3 somewhere. But there are nine markers, and it starts in the pituitary, which is the size and shape of a pea, and that's what creates TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. That TSH goes through the liver. That's why you want to make sure your liver is clean and optimally working, and it creates T4. T4 is our inactive thyroid hormone. It's inactive, right? It's one of those things where it just rings the bell, but it doesn't get the ball in the cup. It's inactive, and it's 93% of the equation. Then we have to cleave off one atom of iodine for that T4 to now convert into T3. T3 is our active thyroid hormone, and it's only 7% of the equation. So that conversion process is extraordinarily important. If you're not testing for T4 and T3, how are you going to know if you're converting? Because really the star of the show is your free T3. So when we look at hormones of any kind, we're always looking at free and total. Free means it's unbound. That's what's usable to our body. And total is the sum of what's bound to proteins and what's unbound. So it's very helpful for guidance. And then let's say you've got a good TSH, you've got a great T4, you're converting very effectively, which is unusual, but it does happen. And your T3 is still a little bit low. Well, then we look at reverse T3. I always look at reverse T3 because you could be stealing from the pie, right? So reverse T3 tends to go elevated when we have chronic inflammation, systemic inflammation, and a lot of stress. So if you've got high cortisol, you're likely to be reversing. So we look at that. The other marker that we look at is T3 uptake. And T3 uptake tells us if our sex hormones have any effect on our thyroid. What happens is they typically can compete for the thyroid site. So we should notice if there's an imbalance of estrogen. And for guys, we can see if there's an excess or a decrease in testosterone. And those sex hormones can affect your thyroid, your T3. And then I look at two different antibodies, the thyroid peroxidase antibody and the thyroglobulin antibody. So that is a total of 9 markers. And that gives us a very complete, comprehensive look at the thyroid function. Is it low? Is it not converting? Is it reversing? Is it being affected by hormones? There's so many things that can be happening. Is your pituitary not responding to a low thyroid? Is it over-responding? Is it making too much, too little, so on and so forth? So there's so many different scenarios that, you know, as I said, I'm not really good at guessing. If I get your TSH and it's high, then I'm going to have to start making some guesses. Why is it high? Well, don't worry. We have medication. We'll bring it down. But we don't even know what we're trying to fix, right? So that's what I look at in thyroid. Yeah.
Okay. So as an individual, if my doctor's telling me that I'm having some issues with my thyroid, obviously they're going to want to put you on a medication. They're not going to do a lot of root cause analysis because it's an if this, then, as you said, then the pill. That's the current training. What can we do ourselves to kind of support the thyroid and to heal, maybe without that medication, but maybe we're supported with that medication until, like I said, I was able to get to a point where I thought this doesn't make sense that I'm on this for the rest of my life. I just want to see if I still need it after I've healed a lot of other things that were going on.
Yeah. And bravo to you for doing that. That's amazing. So there's lots of things that affect the thyroid. So there's a lifestyle is a huge one, right? So sleep, good enough sleep is really, really critical. Too much stress can definitely affect your thyroid, just like most things. And then there, you know, and some emotional trauma. Emotional trauma can ignite a thyroid to go hypothyroid. So, you know, a very bad life event or stressful emotional event can trigger that. It usually can trigger antibodies. Pregnancy is something that really tends to trigger autoimmunity as well with the thyroid. And then there's food. And food is a huge thing that we have control over, right? So gluten is the number one thing that I would remove for anybody with thyroid concerns. Gluten really isn't a health food. We have, our gluten is different than it used to be. I can go on and on and on about gluten, but it helps cause leaky gut, which doesn't help the thyroid. It's not helpful for a thyroid. So I would remove gluten immediately and thoroughly. Soy is not really, the soy and thyroid don't really get along. So soy lecithin, that is really a stabilizer in most fruit foods, a lot of processed foods, but even chocolates have a lot of soy lecithin. So soy products, edamame, soy sauce, things like that, I would remove that. Dairy is not my favorite with thyroid or inflammation. So gluten, dairy, and soy would be things that I would, if you're really looking to be very aggressive with treating a thyroid, those are the things that I would remove. And then sugar is, you know, it's not our friend, even though we think it is, but it really isn't. And so sugar wouldn't be something that I would do, but lots of green leafies that have lots of nutrients and folates and things like that. Protein, fat, and fiber is what I usually say. That's what we can sustain ourselves for long term, and make sure you're sourcing your meats and your fishes very cleanly. It's very hard. It's becoming harder and harder and harder, unfortunately, but that's a really big factor. And alcohol. So alcohol wouldn't be something that I would say, enjoy on a regular basis with a challenging thyroid. Exercise, movement of the body is really, really important, but not too much exercise. So too hardcore, marathon runners and really a lot of aerobic exercise puts a little bit of strain and stress on the thyroid. So that is not something, maybe more yoga or walking or maybe one spin class a week versus 7 days a week, that kind of thing, is really, much better for the thyroid. And toxins are a big factor in thyroid health. So make sure you are decreasing your toxic load with all your cleaning products and your candles and your deodorant and your beauty products and shampoo. I mean, we're inundated, right? It's The average American female comes in contact with over 200 toxins just before she's left the bathroom each morning. So it's we're bombarded by toxins. And the other thing I would say is vitamin D is really important for thyroid health. So make sure your vitamin D levels are between 80 and 100 and make sure you're having a good vitamin D with vitamin K. There's a very popular brand that's sold all over the country that is that most people bring into my office. A lot of people do. And there's soybean oil and corn oil in the actual vitamin. And there is no vitamin K in it. So you can't even absorb it. It's crazy. So yes, you have to look at your ingredient list on your supplements as well as your food. Crazy that we have to do that, but we do. And you know, clean water, things like that. Just make sure your toxic load is really decreased. And then there are things that can cause thyroid issues like Epstein-Barr virus. If it's an activated virus in your system, then it can dysregulate blood sugar and thyroid and cause up to 33 autoimmune diseases. So those viruses and pathogens, bacterial infections, things like that. And oral health is really important as well. So make sure that your teeth are in good shape, you're flossing, and there's no oral bacterias that are causing infections.
Okay. Now, you spoke about stool tests. So what can our poop tell us?
Oh, everything. So much. So I'm a huge fan of the stool test. It's funny because when I was going through my journey and my investigation, that's what kind of saved me, right? So I did all the testing, all the blood work and everything. What am I allergic to? All that stuff. And my thyroid moved just a hair. And I thought, oh, I was 100% compliant for 3 months. It cost me a fortune with all these supplements. I ate perfectly. I didn't eat any sugar. And all of a sudden I did a stool test and I found an overgrowth of bacteria that I brought to a biological dentist, and it turns out it was a salivary bacteria. Turned out that 23 years prior to that day, I had my wisdom teeth removed and they happened to have left a little root in there. And that root had a little abscess around it. They left a little piece of metal in there while they were there. Anyway, I had no pain. You couldn't feel anything. There was nothing, not one symptom. And it turned out when I had that removed, my number started to stabilize. So it was that for me. So anyway, so those things are really, really important. But stool tests, when I do the stool test, I look for parasitic and bacterial pathogens. So E. coli, Salmonella, C. diff. And those are things that some doctors really don't test for. And if you do go to a GI, they usually test about 4 markers. And so if you don't have those markers, then they're like, you're fine. Even though you have chronic diarrhea and you have stomach pain, you know, they don't know what it is. But H. pylori is a big one as well. I look for H. pylori, and H. pylori is very communicable. You can get it from fecal contamination, oral to oral. Family interinfections are very common modes of transmission, and that can lead to peptic ulcers and gastric cancers if it's not treated. So that is something I look at very closely. I look at parasites. I look at worms. I look at the good guys. How many good guys do we have? How many of our good microbes are helping us fight? And I look at the bad guys. How much overgrowth do we have? Do we have extensive overgrowth? Do we have dysbiosis, an imbalance of good and bad gut bacteria? And then I look at fat malabsorption. I'm looking at your pancreatic enzyme production. I'm looking if there's any occult blood. I'm looking at inflammation, immunity, the secretory IgA, you know, where our immune system, we have 75 to 85% of our immune system is produced in our gut. So I'm looking at taking a roll call, you know, how many good guys do we have helping us? And then I'm looking at leaky gut and inflammation are pretty big there. So I get a really thorough look, and I cannot tell you, it's just, I love watching people heal. It is absolutely the greatest thing about what I do. It's, and I get to do it all the time. It's amazing. So that stool test helps. You know, we're looking at yeast and fungus, and you know, I get a lot of people with eczema that we seem to be able to get rid of because we're looking again at the root causes of that eczema. Even if you've had it your whole life, There's root causes, and it's usually gut related. It's not what ointment or moisturizer you're using or not using. So yeah, it's a pretty thorough test.
Okay, good, good. Now, you have what's called an RGN detox, and full admission, when I see the word detox, I kind of take a little half step back and shudder and like, oh no. But I'm going to say this was not what I expected. So can you talk a little bit about your detox, what it is and how it works?
Yeah. And I absolutely agree with you as far as the word detox and cleanse is concerned. I think they've been overused, like the kind of like the word diet, right? It has a whole different sort of meaning. And there's things that you can do to detoxify. I mean, the juice cleanses that were so popular a few years ago, I mean, there's no fiber. There's no fiber in the juice cleanses. Well, you have to have fiber to attach to toxins to get them out of the system. So it was a little bit more of a digestive break, but not really cleansing much. So there's a lot of different detoxes and cleanses on the market. I think I've tried pretty much all of them. I have fainted on some. I mean, there's lots of different ones, and then some of them are effective and some of them I think they're great marketing, good packaging. But the RGN detox is my third iteration, because this, I realized exactly how to detoxify the body. And basically it's a collagen shake that you're having. It's a collagen powder. I'm a huge fan of collagen because of leaky gut, hair, skin and nails, muscle, tissue, connective tissue. I mean, I can go on and on about collagen. I'm a huge fan. And then I have some antioxidants and amino acids that help open up gently pathways 1 and 2 for gentle detoxification to the liver. The liver is pretty much the king of the castle. It's kind of like when you go to a community and they have the guard there, and there's the lane for the visitors, and then there's the lane for the residents. The residents are the foods that we eat that our body knows what they are. So we get those right through the system. And then the visitors are those foreign things like dyes, chemicals, additives, preservatives, fragrances, BPS and glyphosate and things like that. They have to go through a system so the body can convert them into an enzyme in which they can be escorted out of the body. It takes time, and the liver gets tired and it gets run down. So it gets slow, sluggish. And then on top of that, if we're eating a diet an eating lifestyle that's filled with processed foods and sugar and over carbs and all that, then we tend to get fatty liver, even if you're not drinking alcohol. So what the detox is 2 shakes a day, and you're adding, I'm all about protein, fat, and fiber. So that's your protein. You're adding a fat like avocado or coconut cream or almond butter or MCT oil or tahini. And then you're adding fiber. So any greens or any seeds, I do all of that every day. And then you're having a liquid. So water or almond milk or coconut milk or hemp milk, all unsweetened, of course. And you're having that twice a day. They're extremely filling. So you really aren't hungry, but it's not a starvation diet. So if you're hungry, you eat. And if you're not, you don't. In addition to the 2 shakes a day, you can have clean animal protein, unlimited vegetables, cooked any way you want, except for deep fried, and then sweet potato and yams, and good fats. So eggs, nuts, seeds, olive oil, avocado oil, and coconut oil. So you shouldn't be hungry. If you are hungry, then eat. But we're eating clean foods. We're getting the chemicals out at 14 days. Yes, people do it all day long for weight loss, which drives me crazy, but you do. Women typically lose 4 to 7 pounds and guys lose 7 to 15, but it's not a weight loss program. It is a wellness program. What I love, I just heard this yesterday from somebody I just started working with, is she said, I can't sleep through the night ever, ever, never, ever. On the detox, she did. And same with constipation. She doesn't go every day. Now she goes every day. So it just kind of cleans your system out. It boosts your energy, clears your skin. You're just working better. You just are. And of course, you're losing weight because we store our toxins in our fat cells and fat tissues. So off they go. So it's not a diet, right? So we don't go back to In-N-Out right after the detox, but it's a kickoff to a new lifestyle.
Okay. And you always recommend that people do the detox and then they work into one of the 6 food frames. Now, what I like this was because we could be having this conversation, and the instant you start talking about paleo or keto or whatever, the vegan's going to come out and say, but I'm a vegan. But there's a vegan version of this, and there's a FODMAP version of this. And so there's six different food frames. Can you take us through the food frames and kind of how we would structure going through this?
Yeah. So my whole philosophy, that my methodology of food frame, was created because I've been doing this for decades. And when people used to come into my office when I first started, I would say, okay, eat like this. It was a one sheet. Everybody got it. And some people would come in and go, I feel amazing. All my symptoms are dissipating. And other people would come in and say, I feel the same or worse or nothing's happening. So I thought, And then I realized that we should all be eating according to our current health status. So what that means is, if you are in a state of autoimmunity, you've got rheumatoid arthritis, you've got fibromyalgia, you've got Hashimoto's or Graves' disease, the first most important thing to do is to quell that inflammation, right? We've got our Th17 going, our cytokine storm is happening. We are in the state of inflammation. You're not going to lose weight in the state of inflammation. It's like having a fire in the basement and somebody saying, hey, can you help me change the light bulb? You're like, what? We got this big fire, right? We got to put the fire out. So for that person, I'm recommending the autoimmune protocol. That is a 30 to 90 day protocol. And it's pretty strict, and it's pretty much what I talked about: eating clean meats, vegetables. There are a couple of vegetables not included, like nightshades, and then no eggs, no seeds, no nuts. But you can have certain fruits, and I describe it. I give a list of everything that you should be eating. And that has been amazing to watch. I've seen people with Tourette's disease that have no longer have symptoms. I've seen everything. Rheumatoid arthritis, it's amazing for. I use it a lot. I mean, I use it with every autoimmune patient that I have, but a lot of just every autoimmunity is great. Once you're finished with that, I recommend going on either the paleo or the low lectin program. So low lectin is basically very similar to AIP because it really is based on taking out lectins, which cause inflammation. Lectins are basically under an umbrella called anti-nutrients. And lectins are what I call the protective hard candy shell around a germ or a seed in living plants. So we all, as living organisms, have the ability to protect ourselves against danger, right? Humans can flee and kick and scream and yell, call 911, but plants don't have that ability. So they have this protective coating called lectins. And so they're very hard to break down, especially if you don't have enough digestive enzymes, right? So they will cause some inflammation. So we remove, it's basically in the skin or the seeds. So for cucumber skin and seeds, tomatoes, same thing. Nightshades, those are tomatoes, potatoes, eggplants, goji berry, and peppers. So peppers of any kind except for black pepper. So those are very important to take out lectins. Then we have low FODMAP. And low FODMAP is for people with SIBO, small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. That really is chronic bloating coupled with either chronic constipation or chronic diarrhea or alternating of those. So that is also a 30 to 90 day protocol, also quite strict. And basically what we're trying to do, low FODMAP, FODMAP is an acronym for fermented oleosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. So in plain English, that means these are certain types of carbohydrates that will attract and absorb water and cause tremendous bloating. It's very uncomfortable for people with SIBO. And so the low FODMAP diet is really helpful for them. So again, animal proteins are great. Fiber is really iffy. It's a very slow going. So you can have one asparagi the first week, and the second week you can have two, and you know, so on and so forth. And then gradually as you go up, you can get to a whole cup. And then eventually, you know, we're trying to starve off that bacteria that's in the small intestines rather than the large intestine. I use low FODMAP for leaky gut. I'm sorry, not leaky gut, IBS as well. So anybody with irritable bowel syndrome or just general inflammation in the intestinal lining, that will help as well. And then we have keto, and keto is basically when we take our fuel source from carbohydrates that it is now, and we switch it to fat so that we are fueling ourselves with fat and not carbohydrates. This one is, there's a lot of studies that you can go long-term and be on keto forever. It's not my observation that that is a good thing to do. I think that 3 months is an ample time to be on keto. You take a break, you can pop back on after about a month off and go back on. There's studies, extensive studies in both directions. Everybody says, what about cardiovascular disease? Because you're eating all the bacon and the cheese you want. But there's studies both ways. And there's a lot of conclusive studies that show that keto is very good. Not for everyone. So I do genetic testing in my office as well. So people who have a hard time with fats are not the people for keto, genetically, right? The people who do not have a gallbladder are definitely not the people for keto. The people who have high steatocrit that I see on the stool test for fat malabsorption, or GGT, which means your bile is sludgy, that's what helps you digest fats, that is not somebody that I would recommend keto for at that time until we clean that out and you're being able to digest your fats efficiently. The problem with keto tends to be not getting enough fiber, so that you have to be really diligent about making sure you're having fiber. And then paleo. Paleo, as you said, that's what you do. I do the same. And I think that's the broadest one that I use, probably the most popular one that I use, or the one that we end up landing on, regardless of where you start, you're going to pretty much land on paleo. And it's really, I find it to be easy. It is, I think, great. It's really focusing on non-processed quality foods. And we stay away from grains and dairy and legumes and processed foods and sugars and things like that. So you're eating animal protein quality, vegetables, again, unlimited, and good fats, sweet potato, yams. And I see people thrive tremendously on that. And then the last one is vegan. And vegan is, I am a former vegan myself, a recovering vegan. And when I was going through my process, I was eating vegan and I was eating phenomenally clean. I did not have a speck of sugar in those days. And I ate a lot of garbanzo beans and black beans and lentils. And I saw my blood sugar increase. And I was just having a lot of carbohydrates in that day. It wasn't a good fit for me. And I talk about it in the book. There's lots of different types of vegetarians. Vegan is one I think you have to supplement with B12 for sure. And B vitamins is what I would recommend. But I think absolutely plants, we should be having 60 to 80% of our plate should be plants, regardless pretty much of what you're doing, unless it's SIBO, low FODMAP. But we should be eating a lot of plants. We don't eat as many plants as we should. But I have a lot of issues with fake meats and fake food. So I really think we should be eating real foods that we were actually born to eat.
Absolutely. Sarissa, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are 3 strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
I would say the very first one would be mindset. Because if you have the mindset to want to do it, you're going to do it. If you don't have that mindset, if you feel that it's deprivation or I don't want to, or I can't, or I'm not willing, that you need the mindset to want the rewards and want to earn it. It doesn't feel like work to me, but I can see where some people feel like, you know, don't take my Twinkies and my Starbucks from me. I get that. But you've got to have that mindset. The second one would be protein, fat, and fiber. I just think that's what we live off of, protein, fat, and fiber. So eating good quality protein, fat, and fiber every meal, every day is going to give us the ultimate health. And then I would say lifestyle is just absolutely essential. You've got to move your body and you've got to sleep. You've got to decrease your stress and you've got to unplug and find happiness. Laughing is really important, and unplugging and being in nature and connecting with people is essential.
Thank you. If someone wanted to learn more about your book, Food Frame, or you, where would you like for me to send them?
Yeah, they can go to my website at Risa Grew Nutrition. It's RISAGROUX nutrition.com. I'm on social media platforms, Risa Grew Nutrition. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Great. You can go to 40plusfitness.com. I'm sorry, 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/639. And I'll be sure to have the links there. Risa, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome back, Raz.
Hey, Alan. You know, there's a lot of really great information that you and Risa discussed. Her book, Food Frame, Diet is a Four-Letter Word. I do love that. I know that we vilify the word diet so much. I can see that. But I liked a lot of what she had to say, especially that not everybody can follow the same diet. And she has developed these different food frames to highlight different ways of eating that people could experiment with. And I love that whole concept, is that there is, like, we see articles all the time. What is the best diet? What is the best diet? And that the bottom line is we all cannot eat the best diet. There is no best diet.
Yeah. Well, there is a best diet for you. You know, if you try a food and it doesn't agree with you, then don't eat it.
Right.
it's pretty much that simple. You know, while I was at the retreat, you know, I had a little bit more alcohol than I, you know, would have, and I feel it. I'm like, okay, body, mm-hmm. thank you for telling me to not do that again. You know, if you don't know what you shouldn't be eating, then in my opinion, one of the best ways is just to go to a very restrictive, exclusion diet. You know, mm-hmm. you exclude all the foods that typically give people problems, you know, like, mm-hmm. Nuts and milk and, mm-hmm. you know, bread and all that stuff. You get all that stuff out and then you just eat meat and vegetables, mm-hmm. which is what I eat.
And it makes it so easy.
You know, meat and vegetables. And, yes. And then, so you do that when you do that for 3 weeks and then you basically say, okay, I feel good. Mm-hmm. You know, so one of those foods definitely was a problem. And then you just make a decision. What was the one food that you really miss? It might be mm-hmm. you miss cheese and you're like, okay, I'm going to try to reintroduce cheese and dairy, some dairy into my food. Mm-hmm. And so you start reintroducing that. If you feel okay after a couple of weeks of reintroducing it, then you're probably good with that. But if you reintroduce something, like it could be nuts, it could be legumes, it could be whatever, mm-hmm. and you start realizing, okay, now I'm feeling terrible. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. You just mm-hmm. found the food that you shouldn't be eating. So, you know, it isn't that, you know, it isn't a diet mm-hmm. at that point. I mean, it is a diet because diet, the term means what you eat. Yeah. We shouldn't have to say four words to get one word, you know, your way of eating.
Yes.
It should just be what yes. makes you feel better, mm-hmm. eat what makes you better. Mm-hmm. And we all know if it comes in a box, bag, jar, or can, it's probably not that.
Ideally.
So, yeah. You know, it's just about paying attention to mm-hmm. how food treats your body. It's information. Mm-hmm. And if your body doesn't react well to it, mm-hmm. well, you're effectively poisoning yourself. I mean, mm-hmm. not real, real poison, but just enough to make you feel bad. That's enough though.
Yeah, it is. It's not fun. And like you had mentioned just a second ago, I mean, you have to spend time doing this a couple of weeks, you know, eliminate yeah. something for your body for a couple of weeks to see how your body feels. I mean, yeah, most people do.
If you're going to do an elimination diet, I would mm-hmm. encourage you to just go full bore, eliminate everything that might be a problem. Mm-hmm. And then start reintroducing. If you mm-hmm. try to just take one thing out, well, there might be two things that you're eating that are causing you problems and you might not mm-hmm. find the thing.
Yeah.
So I would say, go ahead and eliminate all the questionable things, you know, mm-hmm. It's the grains, it's the dairy, it's the legumes, it's the nightshades. It sounds terrifying mm-hmm. that, you know, you're going to eliminate all these things. But if you can just go with meat, fish, and some vegetables for about mm-hmm. 3 weeks, mm-hmm. you're going to be amazed at how well your body feels
yeah.
at that point. And guess what? It's really, really hard to overeat. when that's what you're eating. So you're very likely in that 3 weeks to lose some weight, some solid weight. And then at that point, as you do the reintroduction, you'll start to feel what's giving you inflammation. Your joints start to hurt. You're like, oh, I must be sensitive to grains because my joints hurt again. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize I went for 3 weeks with no joint pain. Well, mm-hmm. okay, now you know.
Yeah.
If you're not eating the grains, then you feel better.
The interesting thing about that too, Alan, is that there are so many different foods that can give us these types of problems that we just don't realize. I think everybody's aware that people have peanut allergies or fish allergies, you know, some of the big ones. But in my family, my mom is allergic to blueberries, which who'd have thought, you know, who thinks? My brother is allergic to apples, and apples are in quite a bit of food products, all sorts of juices and all sorts of even food and pastries and whatnot. But I mean, just who would think that anyone is allergic to apples? But I mean, some of these just innocuous foods that we have every day, like you said, anything that's a grain, maybe it's, you know, carrots or something weird, you know, people just don't realize that how these normal non-allergic looking foods might respond, or how their bodies respond to these really normal foods.
Yeah. So she does, she kind of makes it easier with this book for you to kind of go through and evaluate what's going on mm-hmm. in your body, get yourself cleaned up mm-hmm. and, you know, work through and find one of these food frames that
I love that
will work for you. They're just ways of eating. So not to get fancy about it, guys, it's not like she's created a whole new ways of eating. That she's mm-hmm. basically leaning in on ways of eating and kind of cleaning them up a little bit and saying, okay, you know, we're not going to do dirty keto. We're not going to, you know, we're going to do this the right way with good quality mm-hmm. food. So yeah, pretty good book.
The one other thing I really want to highlight too is her concept of functional nutrition. And you guys spend a lot of time talking about the thyroid. So thank you, because that was a really nice primer for me having a hypothyroid. But that's one major thing, is that we are at different health stages at different ages or times of our lives, and changing what we eat can really help our bodies to heal. So, you know, I might've been keto and I'm still largely keto, but I'm looking at other things that can help my thyroid, you know, work better. And like I'd mentioned earlier, I'm still kind of sedentary. And so I've changed my way of eating because I'm not running as much as I used to. So, you know, there's just, you don't have to pick one diet and stick to it.
Right. Well, and you probably won't be able to, because, you know, as you age and things happen, you know, like for example, I function very, very well on keto, mm-hmm. But my mother has had her gallbladder taken out. So guess what? She doesn't want to eat. So when I go over to her house, I can't be fixing a bunch of keto dishes thinking, right. Oh, well, she'll never know, because it tastes just as good. uh-huh. I have to be cognizant of the fact that, yeah, she couldn't take the volume of fat that's in that mm-hmm. meal mm-hmm. and probably doesn't even need the volume of protein that's in that meal mm-hmm. The way I would fix it for myself. So mm-hmm. as you get older, as things go on, yeah, you just got to take that into account, adjust mm-hmm. your eating, but you still, you know, just, it goes back to eat real food.
Yeah.
If you're eating the stuff that's in the middle aisles of a grocery store, you're not doing your body any favors. Mm-hmm. And if your objective is weight loss, so we're saying the word diet, if your mm-hmm. objective is weight loss, if you're eating the stuff in the middle of the store, it's probably not going to happen for you. It just, for sure. just isn't.
Yep. Change.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you next week.
Great. Take care, Alan.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you enjoy today's show, take a moment and subscribe so you don't miss the next one. And if you would, please leave us a rating or review on your podcast player of choice. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we discuss hiring a personal trainer or online coach. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.